You're listening to Trending. This is Timory Millington. That is Chris Mueller. What an eventful past couple of weeks in the news. Man, Chris, sometimes I just look at everything that's going on and my heart is just like, man, I'm struggling looking at this. And I am reminded constantly of the joy we are called to have as Christians and how, you know, I can't handle what everyone else is doing around me, but what I can handle is how I respond to things.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we forget that the world Jesus came into was a world that needed good news. And that good news is still good for this day. We have the good news that we have a Savior in Jesus Christ who came to set us free from sin, to deliver us from the powers of darkness. And, you know, while we see those, I think in some respects, we see a reversion in our culture to those Roman times, that Jesus still conquers all. You know, the gospel tells us, in this life you will have troubles, but take heart, I've overcome the world. That truth is as true as it ever was. We stand in the victory of Christ, and we can't let go of that. We can't fall down. We can't despair. We can't lose hope, because we know that Christ has won that victory, and we're called to live and to move and to be in that victory.
You know, and it reminds me that we're all called to be warriors in the midst of this. I remember when I was in a summer formation with the community of St. John, and we were praying the Psalms throughout the day, and I was taught that the Psalms that the monks pray, when they commonly pray either in two rows facing each other or in a U, they're actually chanting back and forth, and it's a battle cry of one another to virtue, to stand up in the faith. And, you know, I think that sometimes we miss that, and so we talk often about how men today are struggling in the church. Men, there's this attack on men across the board. We're going to be talking about the change in allowing a little more free recess time and how that changes kids in schools and how there's an attack on masculinity in college campuses. Apparently, that's a mental health crisis. You guys, it's coming up a little later. But Chris, this past weekend, I was actually at a book signing. A couple friends of mine asked me to go with them to be their designated picture taker because they're really excited to meet this guy, Jocko Willink. And I have been hearing a lot about him on social media and from a couple friends of mine who've really been inspired by this man who wrote the book Discipline Equals Freedom, along with a number of other books, a couple awesome ones for kids as well. But Chris, a lot of what he teaches comes from his experience of 20 years as a Navy SEAL. And he looks and basically is challenging people, especially men, to take responsibility for your lives. And when you are disciplined, when you're waking up early, it actually reminded me of you, how you're telling me recently you're on this journey to wake up extra early so that you actually have the time to get your exercise in, eat well, you know, all these things that, especially working, I think, in apostolic work, having a family, you almost don't have time for yourself unless you insist upon that time.
Well, it's almost like a monastic tradition brought into your life, right? Like
forced on us.
Start your day with discipline and purpose.
Right. Well, and it allows you to be free. And this is what his books is on. Discipline equals freedom. Well, when you're disciplined, you can have that piece of dessert later on. If you're disciplined throughout the week and you're not going to become this obese individual, you can take a couple minutes of break to spend extra time with your family because you've been working hard all week and you're not behind on your workload. Although sometimes I feel like I'm never ahead on my workload. But this man has inspired so many, Chris. And I looked at this book signing. People showed up in droves, and it wasn't just adult men and, you know, some of the women who read the books, but kids. And he opened up this Q&A section to these little kids, a lot of whom have read his series that he started called The Way of the Warrior Kid, about a little boy named Mark and his mission. And to hear these 5 and 6 year old kids who are talking about being good men, who are asking about, you know, well, at what point is it okay to cry? When is it not okay to cry? Why do I have to make my bed every morning? And, you know, he's walking through these questions with the kids. And I just look and think, what an incredible man and an awesome father who has now taken what he's learned and he's inspiring other men to be better men.
Yeah, no, there's absolutely lessons that we need to teach young men about power, about strength, about the exercise of those things, about the development of those things, so that we don't have young men in a situation where they feel helpless, where they feel like these things are all being done to them, where they feel like they're powerless. You know, we had this tragic story up in Canada where a young man took a van and ran into a crowd because he felt powerless, and he, you know, in his sexual relations, like he couldn't have a relationship with a woman and he felt that was being done to him. Because he made himself, and what kind of crazy narrative you have to tell yourself to make yourself a victim in that situation, where you've got this book, and I think the idea it's coming out of to say to young men, listen, here's how you become the man you want to be. Here's how you take the strength that is inherent in you and you develop it. You know, the discipline that's going to take you there. And discipline isn't something to be resisted. Discipline is something that makes you stronger, makes you better. And you mentioned I've been getting up early in the morning. It's been great, you know, because I get to the gym, right? So I'm getting physically stronger and healthier. When you're physically stronger and healthier, you have more energy to do the things you do. I committed to doing a blog every week for Ascension Press on the gospel. So that's, you know, but I have time. It's consistent. It's happening there. I'm writing episodes of the Chris Mueller Project. So we're going to get that TV show finally out and on the air. And so all these things are happening because there's a discipline, there's a routine in my life so that all of the gifts and the talents that God's given me, I'm now being a good steward of. I'm not just kind of wandering from thing to thing in sort of a mamby-pamby sort of way. And I think too often we've looked at discipline in our society with our children or with adults, and we said, we got to resist this. No, these are things, this is structure that's going to help you live the life you want to live, fulfill the dreams that you've got. And you're going to learn a little bit every day is going to move you further, faster than if you just kind of do things in sprints and stop and maybe this way and sprint and stop, you know.
And then you burn out because you haven't been taking care of yourself. Your prayer life is just suffering. Like, you guys, this is so important. And so when Jocko's sitting there answering the questions from the kids, one of the questions that a kid asked him, Chris, was, he said, you know, have you always lived the warrior life, or at what point did you decide to live the warrior life? Well, and the kid goes, and are you still a warrior? And Jocko goes, well, I think technically, you know, I spent 20 years as a Navy SEAL. Yeah, I was a warrior, but I'm a warrior now, and I wish, and I think your parents would say this too, I wish I was taught about the warrior life when I was a little kid. And that's why I wrote these books. I want you guys to see that we're all called to this journey. And so while Jocko, I think he's Christian, I don't know if he's Catholic, but he has a lot of principle and morality to him, what I see in him is he's challenging men to be better men, and it is making a world of difference. And for me personally, I look at my background in dance, and if I wanted to be better, I had to work harder. I couldn't just say, man, I suck. I'm not good at this. I can't compete. I can't keep up with people. And one of the things that Jocko said to one of the kids is he says, there's almost no one who's naturally good at anything. You have to keep at it. You have to work hard. And, you know, I've seen this time and time again, whether, you know, it's working on the radio. If you don't work hard, if you don't keep up with it, if you don't stay up with what's trending and having that conversation, you will not succeed where you are. You will fail in whatever area of work you are in.
Well, and again, we're teaching kids about accomplishment, but we're not telling them that when you struggle, it's a good thing because it means you're learning. Unless you struggle, you never learn. Unless you struggle, you never get stronger. Yeah, and so we have to keep encouraging and teaching this. I want to point something out, though. You keep saying, he says, the way of the warrior. And there are a lot of people reflexively go, oh, warrior, fighting, ugh. The last thing a warrior wants to do is fight. Mm-hmm. The last thing that any soldier or SEAL or they want to do is get into an engagement. They're going to do everything they can to avoid that, right? But when they're in that situation, they know how to stand their ground. And as a Christian, as a believer, not in physical violence, but we need to have the heart of a warrior to say, the last thing I want to do is fight. I don't want to put myself in places of temptation, but when temptation or that stuff comes into my life, I need to stand in Christ as a warrior in Christ and say, hell, comma, no. Not here, not in my home, not in my family, not in my life. I'm not going to play with it. I'm not going to flirt with it. I'm going to stand firm against the tactics of the devil, and I'm going to just say no.
It makes me think of that battle of prayer before Jacob is named Israel, right? He spends a night with the angel or our Lord, however you want to read it, where he's wrestling all night long. And it's because he endured, and a lot of people refer to that as a symbol of prayer and how we've got to wrestle in prayer. Like, are you guys kidding me? Is a prayer not a war in and of itself? The devil is there trying to prevent you from focusing on anything but what you would like to focus on. It's saying, oh yeah, no, do think about what you need to make for dinner. Do think about that person who said something the other day that really kind of just made you question what's going on. Do stay here in this moment. Don't allow yourself to be drawn away. That's a war in and of itself. We're living in a time where Christianity is mocked, ridiculed. Just that press dinner a couple weeks ago, Michelle Wolf, oh, I don't even want to give it more attention. But you look back at it, that is part of the war, you guys, where we make sexually blatant, cruel jokes, and that's okay. And we have to be the ones who We're silent, respectful, loving, and honorable when that's taking place all around us. That is a war.
It's absolutely a war. You know, there was a quote, I think it was from Splendor of the Church, where he says, to declare faith in God is to declare war on all other false gods. And I had a friend who got really like, oh, it's war, it's blah, 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 tangent. But no, you're literally, when we say, I believe in this God, I'm saying I will have no other God to stand in my midst or around me. I want no part of that. I declare war on that. It's not, those kingdoms will not reign because I belong to this kingdom. And, mm-hmm. and I think in the respect of a lot of Christians, we have to stand and say, I'm changing kingdoms from the kingdom of darkness to the kingdom of light, to the kingdom of God the Father, to the kingdom of Jesus Christ. And he has authority and I come under his authority. And when I move, I don't go out into the world as a helpless subject. I go out as a son of that king. And yeah, there is a struggle in that. Now, that doesn't mean we're aggressive. It doesn't mean we fight like physically with people. We fight like Christ fought. How? By laying down our lives, by offering ourselves as living sacrifices, by not making compromises about truth, and by proclaiming truth with joy when we go out into the world. Not as an assault on people, but because we're an army of love.
Right. And in order to be a part of that army of love, we have to battle the own struggles within ourselves. One of the questions that Jocko Willink was asked at the book signing, and I have to tell you, people showed up in droves. There were hundreds of people there. The whole store was full just for him. And one of the questions, someone said, can you tell in the BUDS training? And that's basic underwater demolition SEAL school, right? When the Navy SEALs are going through some of the most intense training. Can you tell who's going to make it and who's not going to? And this is where he said, no, I can't. You would be shocked sometimes who does not make it and who does make it. But what he did say is he said that training exploits the weakness within you. It just exploits it. And man, Chris, I just thought about it. That is the journey of Christian warfare, where we're fighting to be more virtuous, more loving, more kind. And the weakness within you, any area that just wants to tear at you, any weakness you have comes for preventing you from growing.
Well, and that's why humility is so huge. Because when we don't have humility, we pretend like we don't have any weakness. And God can't come into that.
That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timory Millington. Coming right back on Trending. Don't go away. So one of the big issues that I have with education system today is that there's this idea of zero tolerance, which I think is just set up to make young men fail today.
Well, statistically, you know, it's been proven it's making young men fail today.
And you look at the stats, you're totally right, Chris. And it's unbelievable. You know, little boys are squirmy. They move around. So are little girls. Actually, I think that if I was in a school with a zero tolerance policy, praise the Lord I was homeschooled. Maybe that's part of the reason why my parents homeschooled me, because I probably would have been expelled multiple times. That being said, you know, there's something has to be done. And when we're looking at this issue, you know, zero tolerance for little boys, we're seeing boys are being punished for drawing more adventurous photos in school. You know, we've talked about this a lot on Trending over the years. But what we're seeing, though, is that something needs to change education-wise, too. Like, these kids aren't succeeding. And you have other schools in different parts of the country that are succeeding.
Different parts of the world.
Too. Different parts of the world. And what are they doing? They're giving kids more recess, more time, unstructured time to run around.
Yeah, so this is something that's actually kind of trending, or it's a test being done in a lot of schools right now, is they're saying, maybe we can not medicate kids by adjusting the schedule to see if they're more successful. And any parent is going to know, well, duh, if you let little kids go outside and play in an unstructured way for 15 minutes for every 45 minutes of teaching you've got, they're going to do better for the 45 minutes of teaching, right? And that, it just makes sense. As a dad and as someone who's been working with young people for the last 20 years, I've seen that this is the reality, is that we're medicating more and more and more and more. And, you know, you end up with these students who are on these individualized plans, and they've got these prescriptive drugs and all these things. I run into young people in high school, and we take them on retreat with us, and you'll find out the student hasn't been on his medication all weekend. And mm-hmm. that's been sometimes why he's been a bit of a challenge. And you ask, well, why didn't you take your meds? And he's like, because I hate them. Because I hate them. I feel terrible when I'm on them. I feel like I'm walking around in a fog. And so I don't take them on the weekend because I don't want to feel like that. There's got to be a better way than that, you know? And so I love this idea of, let's just let them go out and play.
You know, Chris, this breaks my heart, because I too have seen the same exact thing, whether you've seen it on retreats when I was working for a university, working in student life. One of the things I saw is, you know, the kids who are struggling with using different types of medication, Ritalin, whatever it might be for ADD, ADHD, they would comment, yeah, I'm very different when I'm on this. I don't feel like myself, but this is what I've been told to do. And it would break my heart because I would see the transformation in these kids. I would see the change in personality. I have a client right now, a Pilates client. She doesn't want to be on the medication that she's taking currently. And I know a lot of people have been taking Adderall who struggle, say, yeah, it helps me focus, but it changes other areas of my life. A close friend, indeed, in like the same exact situation. And I've seen people battle ADD, ADHD with exercise, with proper, you know, nutrition and health. And grant, that's a struggle I personally don't have, but it is one that can be remedied in another way. And maybe it's the school system and how we're choosing to treat ourselves. Maybe that's the problem.
Right. I mean, I don't want to blanket and say there's nobody who needs medication for these things. Because I absolutely, there are definitely probably some people out there, definitely probably, I'm going to be really certain, the people who need meds for this stuff, right? I'm not going to rule that out. And that may be your situation. However, I don't think it's unsafe to say there are a lot of people being prescribed who could be treated successfully in other ways, mm-hmm. right? And so, because we know, right, if you're dealing with depression issues, going out and taking a walk every day has been proven right. to help that, you know, time and again, that this, it lifts spirits, you know, things like taking a cold shower can change your mood, right? And so why, you know, particularly with young people, with little kids who, you know, it's a cliche to say that little boys are antsy, right?
Right.
I mean, it's just a cliche. It's common sense. So why don't we just say, well, gosh, why do we fight that so much? Why do we try to put these little people who, if you watch any other little animal, are going to be all rowdy and rough? Why do we just say, okay, let them go out and play? And I think it's important too, though, when you say let them go out and play, let them go out and play. You know, my 6-year-old was telling me the other day, well, Dad, we can't play tag. We're not allowed to touch each other. So they can't play tag. That's not free play. That's just another structured box you put them in outside right. where they're just trying not to get in trouble. Like most of it, you think about it, most little boys spend their entire lives at school just trying not to get in trouble. Mm-hmm. So they come home and they're like, I can't do it anymore because they've just been living in these boxes. I think we need to give them the freedom to just go out and play and to learn how to negotiate. And obviously we want to keep them safe, but come on, man, just let them come up with games. Let them make their own rules. Let them wave pretend lightsabers, you know?
or that finger. I love it when they're like, you use your finger, I'll use a fork. Let's lightsaber fight.
right. But again, and so then when they get into class, they've got the wiggles out, right? Yeah. And again, this is simplifying things a lot, but they've given their mind some time to relax. So they weren't focused on being good the whole time. They could go out and just have fun. And now they have the energy and the resources inside themselves to sit there and to absorb information in a different kind of school setting.
So this is what's happened. The Finnish schools have some of the best academic scores in the world coming out of their schools, coming out of their kids, individuals. So what happened is this kinesiologist went to Finland for 6 weeks saying, okay, what are they doing differently that we're not? The main thing is she recognized for every 45 minutes of school, of teaching, like Chris said, 15 minutes of playtime in addition to lunchtime. You do not ditch their lunch. It transformed the kids. They saw less need for Ritalin, right? Less need for all of this drugging of these poor little kids, less time sharpening pencils because the kids weren't gnawing on the pencils, grinding the pencils, or breaking them because they were antsy. You guys, this is encouraging young minds to be active, to move, to stay healthy, maybe avoid, you know, the issue of child obesity that Chris and I were just talking about a couple weeks ago.
Right. And again, I feel like this is just a common sense thing, too. I'm an adult. I'm in my 40s. But if I have to sit through a 2-hour-long meeting, I want to run screaming from the room. Right. And so I just now do the same thing to a 6-year-old.
Well, what did right. I do? Just after the last show, I'm like, oh, man, I need to stand up. I stood up and walked around in the studio. That was after 45 minutes, you know?
Right.
We adults need to move around, too. Why is it that we're telling kids, you know, you have to sit here and just learn for hours and hours on end? And we're also forgetting, Chris, that kids don't live as active lifestyles as they used to. They used to play outside before. Now
right.
what do they do?
Well, as parents' commutes are getting longer and longer, too, they go from one school to the next school. Right. You go from your education to your daycare. Right. And again, there you're very structured. You don't get to go out and play the way you would. You know, they've done studies where look at athletes from places like Dominican Republic and the way that they play sports. Right. You go out, you play in the street. And you, mm-hmm. And so they don't have these club systems. They just go play in the street. But think how many more times a kid in the Dominican throws the ball as opposed to the American kid who goes and plays club baseball and he only throws it three times a week. Mm-hmm. Right? The Dominican kid gets to hit the ball constantly because every day they go out of the street and they play. The American kids, we don't play in the streets anymore. It's not safe. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
And our parents are commuting an hour to an hour and a half to work. And so no one's, so dad's not going out and playing in the driveway because he's exhausted or beat and mom's working too. And so, giving kids time at school to go play, to negotiate, to work things out, to make up the rules, to play baseball, but not the right way, right? Not the, according to the rules, but just the way that they figured it out. It's going to be better for them long term.
Well, and to learn what happens. Okay, so the little girl slapped the other little girl. Let's work it out. Instead of just going zero touching policy, well, let's teach them, okay, actually, it's good to interact. It's good to play and play tag and touch properly.
Right.
I think people could use a little bit of appropriate touching in today's world.
Well, yeah, again, like who didn't? I played tag when I was a kid, and I don't remember getting pushed over. I do remember skinning my knees as a kid. That was part of being a kid, you know? And I do sometimes mourn the fact that my kids haven't bled as much as I have. and obviously, most of their kids get hurt, but I want to see them taking some safe chances.
Right.
I want them learning to deal with those things. I want them to get into little arguments with each other and have to work it out. And for me not to always intercede. The worst thing is when your child says to you, I'm so bored. Like, well, go outside and find something to do. I always say, like, we've got all these toys. We have all these things to do. You're bored? Well, let me throw some of this stuff away. And they figure it out pretty fast. Right?
Well, you talk about kind of getting beaten up here. I remember a brief period of time, I think it was in like fourth grade, I did go to the public school, and there was this boy who picked on me, would pick on me and pick on me. I was just trying to play kickball or whatever it was, and he kept kicking the ball at me, trying to hurt me. And he finally kicked the ball and knocked the wind out of me. I fell over. That ended up being, a complaint to the school because it had been continuously ongoing. This kid was picking on me. Well, lesson on both areas. I learned to maybe toughen up when someone's picking on me, right? And he learned, hey, you can't hurt someone like that. I think he might have had like a couple days where he was expelled or something. But, looking at it, that's how we learn. We learn trial and error. And the reality is that it's better for the kids to play outside on a school playground sometimes, with total free play than maybe in a neighborhood with their parents not home where they're told, okay, now you can play freely, but no one has any say or view over what you're doing.
Right. And what we're learning as these young people become adults, they've never failed. They've never had to deal with conflict. They've never done anything without the directions or mom and dad sitting right there with them as kind of their learning, concierge, right? And so we're missing out on that. They're less likely to start a project and go, oh, well, I know I can do this. I can do X, Y, and Z and come up with creative solutions. They go, well, no one told me how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so they're waiting for instruction. Life doesn't work with instructions. So much of life is, I'm going to have to try this, and it might work, it might not. But if it doesn't work, I'm going to try something else. Or I might learn about how I eventually will solve that problem, but it didn't work, but I figured out the ultimate solution because that didn't work, right? And we miss that. When we don't let kids just go out and have free play, we miss learning how to learn.
We're talking more about masculinity and the attack on masculinity coming up. University is actually banning masculinity. It's a mental health crisis. More on that and on male virtue. What does it mean to be virtuous and how can we work on this, especially for men in a day where we need more strong men? We'll be right back on Trending. We've been talking on the show about the issue of masculinity, this topic of toxic masculinity, the issue of the Me Too movement, the issue of men searching for careers, trying to figure out, hey, I went for this college education and now I'm choosing to a totally different area of work. Like the issue of masculinity providing, the issue of being a man in today's world is just constantly under attack and misunderstood. We have shootings coming from children in fatherless homes. The high crime rates are children who do not have fathers. I think we need more men today. This is Trending. I'm Timory Millington. That's Chris Mueller.
Yeah, my dad is clearly the most important male figure in my life, and he taught me strength, and he taught me the proper use of strength. And he taught me, that strength doesn't mean big muscles. Strength means strength of character. It means when you say yes, it means yes. When you say no, it means no. It means you stand up against what's right and you stand against what's wrong. I love the story I may have told on the show before. We were at a movie and it got a little racy and I was like 13 and dad gets up in the middle of the theater and yells, this is pornography, we're leaving, right? That's a man like saying, not, I will stand against what is wrong. I won't let my children be subject to that. So it's scary when you've got universities coming out and saying we need to deal with masculinity like it's some sort of a health issue, like it's some sort of a problem to be masculine.
On that note, the University of Texas is basically looking at the mental health issue. And now they're saying, well, masculinity is a mental health issue. That's a counseling and mental health center there on campus. They're not the only ones. Northwestern, as well as the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, is saying the same thing. They're saying this program, although it isn't supported with evidence, by the way, direct quote from the article, the program is not supported by evidence. There's nothing wrong with men being men. Thank you.
One of the things I was reading these articles is, what it means to be a man is different in different cultures. You know, like in a lot of Italian homes, the dad is the one who does the cooking, right?
Right.
Like, and that's a cultural thing of what happens. In Greek homes, dad tends to do a lot of cooking and a lot of those things. In our more Anglo kind of white American homes, dad doesn't do as much cooking, mom does. But like the gender roles, it isn't so much of a box. And one of the things that this, you know, they're saying in Texas is that traditional ideas of masculinity place men into restrictive boxes, which prevent them from developing emotional maturity. I'm going to say that's not true. Authentic masculinity doesn't and never has, but the caricature of masculinity does, right? And I think, but here's where I think they're solving a problem that doesn't necessarily exist in large scale. Maybe this is just my unique upbringing, but I think depending on your cultural context, most men don't live in a box. Like we don't. We don't live in this little like, oh, I have to have big muscles and I have to, you know, and I'm a caveman or I eat red meat. And we think those characteristics, we think that's funny. You look at Ron Swanson on Parks and Rec, who is that stereotypical idea of masculinity. He works with wood and he eats nothing but red meat and bacon and he shows no emotion. There's nobody who thinks that's real. That's a caricature and we think it's funny.
But I think that the issue is as well, they don't think that's real. They don't know what to think sometimes. And I've seen this because, you know, in doing presentations, talking about theology of the body, and especially when I come in and say, well, let's look at what's happening in the culture. Let's look at some of the news stories and let's see what's happening to masculinity and femininity. And one of the things I talk about is how men, we have got to be able to reintroduce the idea of strength exactly how you defined it. The strength of character. Same thing. Men are called to be leaders. You hear all the time, hey, you're the man, lead. Well, you show leadership by how you live your life, by what you do. You don't necessarily have to be the man at the front of the pack waving that flag, right? That might not be your personality. And you're called to sacrifice for your family. And sometimes that's just a matter of saying no to certain desires. Sometimes that's a matter of saying no to yourself and yes to others. It's who you are.
You know, my son, my oldest weighs the same as I did, I think, when I left for college, and he's in eighth grade. He's just a big kid. He's tall. He's thin, but he's big bones. I'm fine boned like a thoroughbred. He's not. But we always work with him, and we say, like, you've been given this strength so that you can be a protector, mm-hmm. that you can be a defender, so that you can stand up for those who can't stand up for themselves, or you can protect those people who can't protect themselves. And that's not just your physical strength. It's the strength of your character. It's the strength of your personality too, right? And that's masculinity. That's authentic masculinity, right? I think these programs like University of Texas, they say masculinity and they mean this kind of this idea of like you have this strength and it's abused and it's used to subject people and this, it's the patriarchal society and blah, blah, blah. That's not authentic masculinity. And from the perspective of a Christian, that's something we would never say was authentic masculinity, right? We're going to be, when we say masculinity, we mean in the person of Jesus Christ. We mean in the example of God the Father, right? Well, who is the perfect man? Jesus. You know, well, what does he say? Or what does St. Paul tell us? Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church, right? Mm-hmm. We lay down our lives for our families. We serve our families. We put the needs of others in front of ourselves and we use that strength to carry out that mission.
I was talking at a UC school just last year, and I remember I was talking about masculinity, and one of the young men came up after. He, you know, played a ton of sports throughout high school, and now he's in college, and he's playing sports again. I think he was a basketball player. And he said, I have never heard anyone talk about strength in this way. He said, I have spent my whole life, he was a good-looking kid, buff kid, and he goes, I spent my whole life thinking that strength meant how much I could lift, how hard I could push, you know, physically, enduring. And he goes, I see that that's a good thing, but I see that the strength is what's happening on my date and what am I willing to say no to? You know, what am I willing to say yes to? What am I willing to do for that girl I want to date? He goes, I've been searching for the right girl to date, but I can't find her because I'm too busy in my own head thinking about how strong I am.
Right. Yeah. And I do think there is something in our culture that can be limiting to men. Like it can happen. It can happen that you could say, well, you can't be a man and dance, right? Okay, fine. Or you can't be a man and like this type of music. You can't be a man and do that. That isn't masculinity. That's a caricature of masculinity. And so I as programs like this, I feel like it's a really fine line because we have to define what masculinity is and then teach people that, not belittle and degrade masculinity. We need to lift up authentic masculinity. And to be fair, to the University of Texas, they say that the program does not treat masculinity as a mental health issue, and any such statements simply are not accurate. But on the same respect, they're saying that, well, masculinity is sick and needs to be helped. So it's kind of a conflicting thing. I couldn't find anything on University of Texas website to say actually what the program is. It's just not, you know, treating it as a mental health issue.
Well, it's coming from their counseling and mental health center, separate from like the university entity just in and of itself. But what we're seeing, Chris, is some of the things they're saying is, well, traditional views of masculinity can be dangerous. They can be restrictive and they can prevent people from developing their emotional maturity. Well, I could agree with that. Yeah, I think if we don't have examples of authentic, virtuous masculinity, then yeah, it could be dangerous to form your own view of what you think masculinity is, right? We need to see models.
I'm going to argue that progressive views of masculinity are worse because you look at multiple partners, you look at this, you know, not being present for your families, you look at single motherhood, you look at, you know, the abortive society. And I'm just going to say, statistically speaking, it seems like progressive masculinity is killing people literally by disease, killing people literally through abortion, and killing families literally through men who don't have any sort of sense of responsibility.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I even look at this comment where, you know, people say, well, not to put people and restrict them into boxes. I grew up in the dancing world. You mentioned dancing a moment ago. I've seen guys swing both ways in the dancing world, in the performing world, using the same thing. You know, I've seen incredible men who are married with beautiful families who had a 30-year-long career dancing. And I think that, yeah, there's an issue when we do push stereotypes. But I've also seen a lot of people in the dancing world who had issues with their father and sexual abuse and who are identifying as being attracted to men and who... there were never men that were willing to be their friends because they did dance. Like I've seen also, you know, the reaction and cruelty of people when they assume. So I think that overall, yeah, I agree with, we don't have to restrict people, but we also can't say it's bad to be a man. And I think that that's what a lot of men learn today, when in fact the virtues of masculinity, you know, this idea of honor, this idea of strength, this idea of competence, you know, this is something that with men that I see a lot of other guys judge each other based on. Well, is he competent? Like, could he help, like, care for my family if there was an attack coming up? Would he have a skill set that would be helpful for us in our community? Would there be something that he would be willing to be honorable? He wouldn't abandon us to another group of people if there was a fight coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there is something about men we want to know that we can, mm-hmm. right? And it is hard for, I mean, it's hard to feel helpless. I don't think that's just men. I think that's anybody. But there's something about men. It comes up in relationship between men and women all the time. A woman will be dealing with something and a man wants to fix it, right? Mm-hmm. And that feeling of helplessness a lot of times can cause conflict in a relationship. And it is. It's something as, and that's where that masculinity of Christ comes in. Like, I have to look for the will of my father. I have to stand back and to be able to hear and to be present and to say, no, I don't have to fix everything all the time. But that is difficult. Like, I want to fix things. It's just, you know, sometimes you're like, it's so easy. Just fix it. And like, no, really, here's the solution, you know, and that's not the solution.
Have you seen that video?
With the nail?
Yes.
Yes.
It's not about the nail. If you haven't seen the video, you've got to look up on YouTube this video. It's not about the nail. The girl's talking. She's got a big nail in her forehead. And she's complaining about this headache, and the whole time she's complaining, she's frustrated, and he keeps trying to go, well, he's like pointing, like trying to spit out the words about the nail in her forehead, and she's like, it's not about the nail. It's a great video. Well, so when we talk about masculinity, you know, we're coming up on our next break here, but the topic is something that we have to build up. How can we be better leaders? How can we show more of that priestly element of Christ who laid down his life for his bride? How can we look at being better at committing to things. You know, this idea of commitment, I think, is fundamental and something that a lot of men actually do struggle with today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, again, we need to work on role modeling it in the church, right? Mm-hmm. We need to rebuild a culture that progressive masculinity has destroyed.
Absolutely. You know, just some of those ideas of going on and looking at what is virtue and how am I struggling to live this virtue of courage out? How am I struggling to live an integrated, integral life, right? A man of integrity, of truth, of his word. How can I fight within me what is preventing me from living this?
Yeah, absolutely. How am I creating a culture around me to protect and sustain me?
That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timray Millington. You are listening to Trending. More coming up, specifically having to do with religious liberty in the United States and around the world. So I've been reading over the last few days, Chris, about St. Perpetua. Okay. And St. Felicity. And it's really neat because they, for those who don't know, we hear a lot about them in the canon of the Mass. We hear their names over and over again. But they were actually in the early church in Rome, and they faced martyrdom. St. Perpetua specifically was actually kind of a higher ranking individual in the society, and her slaves were actually the ones who converted to Christianity and ended up influencing her to convert to Christianity as well, despite the pleas of her father. And just looking at how she ends up going into Praetorium and the attack of the beasts and the lions and hearing her testimony, it's phenomenal. And I look at this love of our Lord, the refusal to sacrifice, even when she has a newborn child, say, just apostatize, just deny your Christian God, just deny him and worship and drink and send up these oblations to the other gods. And she refused in the face of sacrifice. And Chris, you know, after coming off talking a lot about Alfie Evans and now talking about religious liberty, I think that we need to talk more about these saints.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have this rich deposit of faith. We've got 2,000 plus years of Christian tradition of people who have been there, right? And it's, there's this tyranny of modernity that we think we're smarter, that we know more, that the people in back were morons. They weren't. I mean, they were people. They were educated. They were highly sophisticated in their understanding of the world. Maybe they didn't have the scientific truths we have, but they had to deal with these things. They had to deal with a culture that was oppressive and against us as Christians, against Christian values, against human rights, really. Mm. And so to ignore that and think, well, no, this is the only time that matters. Well, it's foolishness. It's absolute foolishness. And we have to then say, no, what has happened in the lives of those who have gone before me? What have they done? How have they dealt with these situations? People who lived through the Enlightenment, people who lived through the French Revolution, people who lived through the English suppression of the church, right? Like, they're going to have a witness for us as we kind of come into these post-Christian times in the West, for instance, not necessarily around the world. The church is growing. Don't miss that. The church is growing by leaps and bounds, not in the West, but Africa, Asia, South America. The church is growing at some respects faster than it ever has.
Praise the Lord.
But here in the West, we need to look and say, how can I learn from the lives of these saints of what to do in these times of trial and times where it seems like where hope seems hard to grasp?
Well, I look at the saints, and how could we summarize every single saint's story? They fought the fight to the very end. And maybe that's a white martyrdom where you may not be slayed, you may not have your head chopped off, but you may live a life of Christian virtue and witnessed when it is not friendly in the environment toward any type of Christian virtue and witness. Or maybe you will be in the Middle East. Maybe you and I will die fighting for the rights of marriage between one man and one woman. That could be a possibility, you guys. I don't deny it. So when we talk about this, you know, recently the U.S. Commission for International Religious Freedom just released their 2018 report, and they look back over the course of 2017, and 16 countries in particular were noted as major concerns. Now, 10 of those ended up being officially pulled onto a list, and then the other 6, which are actually some pretty big issues taking place even there, are noted. But here are some of the issues that we're seeing religious liberty is being a threat. There is imprisonment, rape, there's enslavement, a persecution of any type of religious education. Although we're not on the list, that's taking place here in the States. Just saying.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think most people, when they hear this, they immediately jump to the Muslim-majority nations in the Middle East, places like Saudi Arabia, who is not on the list but should be on the list, according to many. But we have to remember, places like China, too. Sometimes I think we forget who China is or what China is all about. China is not a democracy. China is a communist country. The state religion is atheism. Catholicism is not allowed in China. It's illegal in China. Now they have a state brand of Catholicism. You know, the Chinese
Catholic Patriotic Association.
Right, which is like the bizarro church. You would go to the Chinese Catholic Patriotic Association and they have bishops, theoretically. They have masses, theoretically. And so it's, you know, you close your eyes, you think you're getting Catholic, but it's not, because they're not allowed to teach the truth with freedom. They're not allowed to proclaim the truths of the church. They proclaim the party line in the guise of a Catholic looking church.
Well, I know religious sisters working out there in China, actually within the pro-life movement because of the one child policy in China. But guess what? She's a religious sister. This one woman in particular, she can't wear her habit. No one can know she is a nun. Even there's this thing where they actually have like these major apartment buildings, and it's common that the people on the first floor of the apartment building are basically not their brother's keeper, but the basically state's keeper, because they're watching, well, are they having a worship service in their home? Are they housing women who might be pregnant with a second or third children? They're watching and letting the family planning officials know, reporting them to different forms of government, that these people are not following what you, the state, have in store for them. They are actually daring to have another child. They're daring to speak the name of Jesus against whatever tyrannical government ideology that is being pushed on them today.
And I think what we forget, and particularly in the issue of China, is so much of our commerce with China. Like we as Americans in our consumer mentality, we're funding this. I hate that, but it's true. You know, when we go to China for cheap goods, we're funding this state government that oppresses its people in such a way that suppresses religion, that persecutes Christians and other people. It's not just Christians. That would not be possible apart from the money of the West going to China. Like, we've made that possible.
You know, I know some people, although it might not make a major difference, but who personally said, I won't buy shoes made in China. You know,
yeah.
As a principal, I won't buy shoes made in China, just like people who say I won't buy blood diamonds, right?
Right.
You know, although you may not be making a worldwide influence, you're saying, I'm not going to participate in that. You know, and I think that we have a responsibility to not just become frogs boiled alive. And a lot of the time, I think we are just sitting back and allowing that to happen.
And I think it's difficult. China in particular, I find to be a very difficult one, because it is so hard to untangle from Chinese goods.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sitting here on my Macintosh laptop right now, right? Okay, well, that's...
Who says Macintosh?
I do.
Sorry.
I do. I'm going to say the whole name while I'm on the Facebook doing that, or watching the YouTube. Yeah, but sure, I'm on my Mac. Thank you, hip young people. But it's, again, this is Chinese goods, right? And how do I untangle from that? And there's a helplessness where we almost want to close our eyes. We can't close our eyes. And as difficult as it is to untangle, one, I think, yeah, we have to be responsible with how we approach that. And two, we can never forget the battle of prayer. Like, we need to be praying for these people who don't have the freedom of religion, who can't practice their Christianity or their Catholicism openly. We need to be praying for conversion in the hearts of their leaders, because our God is a faithful God. Our God moves, and He calls us to prayer, and we need to do that. We can't think, oh, well, the only thing we can do is prayer. No, the most powerful thing we can do is prayer. I mean, that's where we start. And the rest of that, you know, flows from that prayer.
You know, when we have hit a point where some of the people we should have the most respect for, but also some of the highest expectations for, that being our religious priests and nuns, when they're being persecuted to the point of being expelled from monasteries, where they are being imprisoned, where they are being tortured, where they are being beheaded. Did you guys see? I mean this, like, man, Nigeria is one of the countries that was recommended to be on this list that wasn't put on the top 10, but is in that top 16 recommendations. Well, just this past week, a Nigerian herdsman came in and killed 19 people during a Catholic mass. And I just look at this. St. Ignatius Catholic Church, they just lost Father Joseph and Father Felix to this.
Yeah, you got a lot going on there in Nigeria because you have, obviously, this is a part of the of Nigeria where you have Muslims and Christians coming into conflict with another. You've got the Muslim North and the Christian South, and this is kind of the band we have that. You also have farmers who are, you know, farmers take up land, they have crops, they build fences, and you have herdsmen who want to graze their cattle all over. So you've got an economic conflict, too, and too often the economic conflict goes with the religious conflict, and you have massacres like this where they went to the church and then they went and shot up the town and lit houses on fire too.
They burned over 50 homes, open firing on these people. You guys, man, like this is not religious liberty. We talk about the dignity of a human person. What is the dignity of the human person, Chris? It's fundamentally the ability to know something, right? To reason something and to freely choose it. We're living in a time where we can't freely choose something, know it even. We're told what we should believe and that we can't do certain things like worshiping our Lord.
Yeah. Well, how do we respond to that? Well, I'm not going to go to Nigeria. I don't think I'm going to Nigeria. God, you haven't told me to go to Nigeria. If he does, I'll go. But I can pray. I can stand in solidarity with my brothers and sisters. I can, when the missionaries come to and to tell what's going on in the churches in distant lands, I can support the work of those missionaries, right? I can be a part of that, proactively taking the gifts I've been giving and using those to support the work of the church in these places. And I think as a Christian, we have to stop, particularly as an American Catholic, I have to stop and say, I'm so blessed. I've got a better situation than the majority of humanity in human history. I can't hold those gifts of my own. I have to give them to help my brothers and sisters around the world too.
And let's keep ourselves free to worship. Freedom of worship is fundamental, and we've got to maintain it here in the United States, remembering we are called to be the light of the world. And we started the show talking about warriors. You are called to be a warrior for your faith. That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timory Millington. You're listening to Trending. Catch us on iTunes.